Wilbur Kay on the 27th of February 2002. The interviewers are Arnold Thackeray and Jerry Galwas. Dr. Kay, you were saying something about the files.
I have a collection of all of the reprints of all of the publications I've made, which prompts me a great deal on the memory of what happened when. And I have also my own patents. And over here I have a few tapes that I found in an interview that I made with Dr. Beckman 1 year ago.
Oh, I'm delighted you've found those items, and that'll be very
Jeff, next
helpful.
Question, though, is can he borrow them?
And we can make a copy of them, literally, of tapes, if you would like to.
How do you feel about that, do you?
I'm reluctant to part with these, but it depends on the circumstances.
Well, let's talk about that when we've finished the interview, maybe. Was that make
and
sense?
By the way, I made reservations for lunch. Is that okay?
Well, I've got an aeroplane constraint, so we'll have to see. Let's see what time we are as we finish the interview. Is that okay?
Fine. But I just wanted you to know.
Thank you
well.
For the thought. Okay. You started work at Beckman on the 1st of January 1956,
right.
Dr. Kay, as the Director of Research and Engineering for the Scientific and Process Instruments Division, was with Tom Park as the Division Manager and Jack Bishop as the General Manager. And can you say something about your relationship to those people and what your different areas of responsibility were? Were you interacting with Jack Bishop at all, or was it Tom?
Both Jack Bishop and Tom Park were my bosses, you might say.
Okay.
At this time.
Were they involved directly with the technical aspects of what you were trying to do, or simply in a management way?
Primarily in a management role.
If you think about Beckman Instruments in 1956, can you just talk a little about the company? What sort of, I mean, you were no longer with Tennessee Eastman, you were in a different world. What
right.
struck you about your new world compared with the old world?
Well, Jack Bishop had made an offer to me of the job about September of 55, and at that time, it wasn't exactly squared away as to who was going to report to whom. I just went right ahead and assumed my role as both a manager and a scientist.
But were there other people at Beckman in a comparable role to yours, or?
Well, shortly thereafter, they split the what they called the Scientific Instruments Division and the Process Instrument Division, and I had little to do with the process.
Why was that split made?
All the details on that. I think in part what happened at that period of time was that Jack Bishop had made an offer to both me and to Tom Park, and I think he was a little embarrassed that both of us accepted the job, and that he had to figure out how he was going to make the best use of this. Beside that, I didn't know too much about the process instrument side of the business.
What did you hear about Howard Carey when you joined Beckman?
Well, I had known of Howard Carey before I went to Beckman. And our relations were always cordial, but it didn't take me long to realize that Howard Carey and Arnold Beckman didn't get along very well. So I played that one kind of quietly.
What was the nature of the disagreement or the animosity?
Howard Carey had worked for Beckman for a number of years before this period, at least back to the 30s. And I think at that time that Beckman thought all okay with Howard, but when Howard left Beckman's employ and went off and made his own Carey spectrophotometers, this didn't set too well with Beckman, because he felt that many of the ideas that Howard was putting in had been developed under his tenure at Beckman.
How did other people in Beckman feel about that?
I think by and large everybody liked Howard and respected his capabilities.
And his organization must have seemed quite a rival, quite a threat, didn't it?
Oh yes. At that time, this would have been about 1946 or thereabouts. Almost everybody recognized that there was a lot to be said for what was in the part of the spectrum below the ultraviolet and above the infrared. So Howard had a real start. With that information, and did very soon bring out his first Carey instrument, which gained a great deal of respect and sales to the rest of the scientific world. Beckman didn't have a product that would automatically draw spectra. This was essential if you're going to make use of either the far ultraviolet or the near infrared. And so Beckman, the people at Beckman were trying madly, scrambling to get an automatic recording instrument. In fact, they brought out a version that was called
a VDUR?
Maybe.
Recording the Beckman model DUR recording ultraviolet spectrophotometer.
Yes, that's it. And they made about four models, four prototypes. And it didn't work very well. It didn't sell at all. So I had already, while I was still at Tennessee Eastman, made an automatic recorder for the DU. And they took it up immediately, produced it, and it didn't work. That immediately gave Beckman the entry into those two fields.
So you were a pretty popular guy.
Yes.
May I interrupt you? Tell us about the DK1A and the DK2A, and what the importance of the A is.
Well, ask the question again.
The DK, there's a DK1 and DK2.
Yes.
All right. How did those come about?
Those were Beckman's efforts at making use of this automatic instrument. They worked, and they worked right on the DU. So the DK1 was essentially a carbon copy of the instrument I had made at Tennessee Eastman. The DK2 was Beckman's version of the DK1. They did some things that lowered price.
When you say it was Beckman's version, you mean that was the modification you developed at Beckman with other people, or what do you mean by Beckman's version?
I know there's a simple answer to that.
Okay.
It's just my memory.
Well, the DK1 was actually produced at Beckman, but it was your original design.
That's right. Yeah.
And then you and an engineering team must have done something to create a lower cost version.
Right. That's correct.
Okay. Yeah. Was Dr. Beckman himself involved in any way with this process?
Not to my knowledge. And what he might have done was in the background of the marketing of the instruments.
The earlier efforts at Beckman before you got there, who was doing that? Do you know?
Well, Bill Ward was one of them.
Was it Hendrix? Somebody, Hendrix?
Henderson.
Bill Henderson.
Bill Henderson.
What was what did people say about Dr. Beckman himself in those days? What was the gossip at the bench about Dr. Beckman?
Not very much. The relationships were kind of distant. Dr. Beckman, most anybody else in the technical end of the business, he was busy earning money.
Doing sales stuff, marketing stuff.
He wasn't himself in the marketing, but he had friends in the marketing, which was marketed during marketing and lost the train of thought.
Okay. I mean, the company was pretty unusual in having a PhD chemist as its CEO, but at this stage did it really make any difference that he was a PhD chemist? No.
Going back to the DUK, it wasn't too long ago, and I think analytical chemistry, we saw an ad of a man that was advertising that he repaired DKs.
It's Tom Black.
Is that who it is?
That's right.
So we figured they were still in use.
Yes, there are. And there are two versions. The early version of the DK2, I guess, had a nonlinear scroll, and the DK2A has a linear scroll.
Is
that correct?
Yes.
And so there aren't very many of the DK2s out, but there are a lot of DK2As, and they're still used every day in lots of laboratories.
And there's a good reason for that. But what is it?
Well, you designed a good instrument.
The DK2 came really in several versions. When we brought in the, originally it was only for the visible region. Then we got into it with the far ultraviolet region. And then the near infrared. And there's something about these instruments and the way they record it. That continued to be in the Beckman instruments, whereas Howard Carey did it somewhat differently.
Here's the cream if you want it.
There was a whole series from the DK1, the DK2, the DK3, the DKU. Were you? And you were. Were you the lead guy in that territory, essentially?
Yes.
And you just said, I think, that they went into the far ultraviolet. There were some issues around the DU power supply in the late 1950s. Is that something you recall? And then there was the project to develop the DU2.
This is hard work.
And then there was something, there was the DB spectrophotometer. Do you remember that one?
Yes.
At all? This was acquiring an outside technology. Was there a... They acquired an outside technology when they acquired you, of course. But what was the attitude about bringing in technology from outside Beckman?
Well, it didn't need to bring an awful lot out. The DK1 I had done in at Tennessee Eastman, and when Beckman brought out their first DK, we didn't need to rely an awful lot on any outside help, because the DK1 was a carbon copy of what I had done at Beckman at Tennessee Eastman. It looked the same, had the same arrangement of components.
The introduction of automation into the instruments, scanning and data handling, Was that very much part of the program to do that across the instrument line?
Good question.
To apply those same technologies, automation technologies, to other Beckman instruments. Is that something you were involved with, or?
Well, I was involved in most of the things that were happening at that time. It was just my character to work on the scientific, and I left out a lot of the management aspects of the business.
Were there other people very much in a comparable role to yours, or was your role distinctly unique in that regard?
Who was the fellow who took over the process instruments? Research.
Research. I'm thinking of Tom Kehoe and Brown, but they didn't do the research. I don't recall.
It wasn't Tom Park didn't do that, did he?
No, Tom found his role in managing the day-to-day affairs of the division. It was pretty soon apparent that the best arrangement between Tom Park and myself and Jack Bishop
. If I just go back to Howard Carey for a moment, did Carey ever try? Did you ever have an offer yourself from Carey?
Yes.
When was that?
That was some little time after I had established in Beckman. Mm-hmm. I remember there was a party that Howard Carey through at his house, and at that time he approached me, but I didn't give him any hope that I would leave Beckman and go with Howard.
Why not?
I guess the offer wasn't specific enough for me to give it serious thought.
Over the years he recruited quite a few people from Beckman, I think.
Yes, he did. That was one other thorn of contention between Beckman and Howard Carey.
Was it a two-way traffic? Did people come back to Beckman from Carey, or? Or were you a traitor if you went to Carey?
No, the most notable of that was Bill Galloway. He had worked for Beckman and then became dissatisfied with his, he went to work for Bill Galloway worked for Howard Carey for some little time, maybe as long as a year, but Bill was disenchanted with Howard Carey and came back to Beckman. He went first into the applications end of the scientific instrument division, and then I think I persuaded him to come on over where I was. I had a great deal of respect for Bill Galloway.
Was the issue moving people to and fro mainly money, or was it a difference in the style of the two companies?
Both.
Can you talk about the style difference at all? What it was?
Dig into my brain in long ways to bring up the answer to that.
Could I interrupt you and return for a moment to the DK1? Because when you built that at Beckman, you had... That's correct. But then it was manufactured as a Beckman product.
Yes.
It would seem to me that it had all the attributes to improve a DU that the DU could never achieve. Was there any discussion of why do we continue to sell the DU when we have the DK?
That's an involved question, because
yes,
it has to do with how the instruments work. Look here.
Because the DK had the benefits of scanning, it had UV.
But it was more expensive than the DU itself.
Yes.
And there was another important point, and that is that the DUs gave better answers than the DK.
Really?
Yes. And the DU had established itself as kind of the primary instrument to use when you're doing quantitative ultraviolet spectroscopy. And people were getting different answers from the DU and the DK. Now, they liked the DKs because of its automatic recording features, but also they liked the DU because it was more accurate.
So it had greater photometric accuracy?
The DU.
DU.
Yes. Of course, at that time, the question of what is the accurate answer was a sticky point, because
that was a very good article.
Yes, this says a lot that I haven't touched on, but it's true. The VU accuracy was determined by what the average number was for a given substance, and there were a number of articles published in the literature right about this time arguing this very point, which is the more accurate. They weren't the same answers. It was quite some time later before I realized what the answer was, but that you used a photo tube, and the DKs used a photomultiplier. And the photomultiplier introduced some errors. So the both of them were marketed at the same time, just a different kind of personnel. The people wanted quantitative, accurate answers when you bought the DU. Those who wanted the versatility, the rapid charting of spectrum, chose the DK. And the photomultiplier, there was a difference, but I didn't realize that for a long while.
Please go back to the Model B that's in front of you there. Was that built with a quartz prism?
I don't believe so.
So the quartz prism really didn't emerge until the DU, and that wasn't useful until there was a hydrogen lamp and power supply.
Well, the Model B that's shown here is the second of several prototypes, and it had a glass prism. Then there was a Model C that was introduced a little later.
We say.
And she's disturbed my train of thought.
Oh, go ahead. You're talking about the Model B and the Model C.
Yes, there were two Model Bs that would confuse you, I'm sure. One is the second